in business, as long as you are providing a need that the society needs, then you have a good business model. And real estate is one of those, especially if we're focusing more on, I won't say affordable housing, because that word has kind of a bad connotation to it now.
Right.
But I'll say attainable housing. You know, I'm not Section 8 housing, but attainable housing that people can actually afford. Still in there, right? But they could actually get to is really important.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further.
Welcome back to another episode of Weiss Advice. I'm your host, as always, Yona Weiss. Excited to be here once again. It's actually been a while. I've been on a hiatus for the past few weeks. Took offline for some Jewish holidays, and now we're back to recording. So excited to be here with the first episode of Recorded in a Few Weeks with Amy Johnson. Great to have you here. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
And you reminded me that we actually have spoken before and doing a deal together. And I had totally blanked in it because, unfortunately, even though I have a great memory for people, for whatever reason, it took that trigger to remind me. So I'm glad we're got you back on the show and looking forward to learning more about your background and how you got started in real estate.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and you do a lot of deals. So I talk with a lot of people. So I don't expect you to remember me because back then I was a little peon person then. So
every person's important, but you're absolutely right. You know, talking to hundreds of people a week, it gets hard to remember everyone.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, as far as, so you want to know my background?
Is that I would love to know. You know, I think I remember mentioning that you used to be a teacher as well, similar to me, which is amazing.
Yeah. So I used to be a school teacher. That's what I went. You know, I grew up in a family of like, you know, get a job, then like not knowing, like the breakaway to get out of where you were was education. That's what I kind of grew up with. A little bit. And so I became a teacher. I love teaching. I have the heart of a teacher and I love to teach. And I still do a lot of teaching, actually, just differently. So I started as a high school teacher, family consumer sciences education. In the olden days, they called that home ec. Had an emphasis in housing and finance, though, with it. And so I'd always loved that. I started having my children. I have 5 children now. I had my first child and he had some complications and was in the NICU for a while. And I kind of was getting tired of, I would say, bureaucracy of teaching. I felt like some of the politics was getting in the way of me being able to really connect with these students and teach them these life skills that they really needed. But it was just frustrating. And so I switched then. I was doing at night classes because, you know, teachers make a ton of money. So that's all they have to ever do is one job. We were really poor. And so my husband, you know, he was working he was getting his degree as electrical engineer. And so I taught night classes. I taught some housing classes and budget classes at night to the university of like the extension classes to different communities. And so when my boy was born, I decided I'd just do that more from home, flexible, that I could work with that. And it kind of morphed. We were, I don't know if anybody uses fortunate and the financial crisis together, but we were fortunate enough to kind of organize our household in a way to be a little bit kind of like clean out, like just have our finances in order. We'll just say that. Even though we were super poor, finances in order meant that we just didn't have a ton of crazy credit card debt. And we went down to only one car, and my husband rode his bike to work. Right. And, you know, we just lived frugally, not because we were well off. At that time of living frugally, there were times that we were trying to decide, like, do we fill up with gas or do we buy formula and diapers? Because we were in this complex of going from an income and a half instead of 2.5 incomes.
Sure.
And I just remember feeling really, we both were feeling super frustrated. We had my husband's student loan debt. and saying, okay, what are we going to do? Because we can't live our lives like this. There's no way I can just like work for 20 years and be hopefully that we're happy and retiring and, you know, when we're 60, like we've got to go for more than right. that. And so we've researched and talked and a lot of different people, and my husband's boss was buying a second home, and we were like, huh, like how are you doing that?
Right.
And so we were talking to him, and we did, you know, it's kind of like house hacking. We moved out of our house that I had made. It was super cute, you know, 3-bed, 2-bath little home that back in that day we paid $125,000 for. And we moved out of that house, put a renter, and moved into this total dive that stunk and was super ugly. Like it was gross, but we just did that and then worked on that house. We lived in it while we were working on it. And at that time, because I had 3 kids at that time that mm-hmm. we were into that crazy time of house.
So you just got your real estate experience hands-on from the very beginning.
Yeah, and that's when we just kept moving every year.
Okay,
and
wow.
When I had financial crisis, we were blessed is because we had gotten our house in order. We basically, during that crash, we were able to move into and buy some of these different properties that other people were selling at really good prices for it. And so then at that time, it also opened our doors to other people saying, hey, mm-hmm. I see what you're doing. We don't want to be as crazy as you guys and live in them, but we'll give you some money. And we partnered and we would do some partner on different
stuff. You guys were really like hands-on fixing the stuff up. So you probably learned a ton, you know, just from the, you know, contracting and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And we found out that we're not super handy.
Find out the hard way.
My skill set, I wasn't great with a hammer, but I was good at forming a deal and I could do that. So, and that's where my partnering or, you know, creating a deal structure really blossomed. And so I didn't go back to teaching like we were planning on. Originally, I was planning on just taking a 1-year hiatus and I didn't do that. I did still teach at night and I did, you know, odd jobs to keep the money coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where we started. And so fast forward, different deals went in. We obviously started with single family. We went into some larger assets. We tried a couple other assets and that was like, we failed a couple times on a couple other assets. And we're like, oh, okay, we don't want to do that one. It just morphed into fast forward that about, you know, 15 years, we started to accumulate quite a few doors, but we were not happy with just the single family homes anymore. We wanted to go into bigger deals.
Okay.
And that's when we went into storage units, first as investors, then we went as developers ourselves, you know, working on it ourselves. And then some of our properties that we started with for storage units would get denied as storage units. So then we would pivot and I would, you know, they denied storage, but it allowed me to build townhomes or something.
Oh, interesting. Like so let me back up there for a second. When you say, you know, start developing storage and then it would get denied, you mean in like the planning, in the zoning stage of it? Or would you actually go through, you know, pre-development and then be told, no, you can't actually do that? I mean, redevelopment type properties?
In the entitlement process, you know, we'd identify a piece of land. We'd say, okay, this piece of land would work great with storage. It's not zoned storage. But we talk to the cities and they say, well, maybe it could be if you did, it's like this underlining, you know. And so we try to go for a zone change.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
For it.
Okay.
And sometimes
makes
sense. It was denied, even though they said at the front that, yeah, we'd be open to storage here, you know, don't believe the cities.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So there's a lot in there. I mean, you just like basically skipped like 15 years over there from going from the single families to doing all types of other deals to where you are now developing properties. I wanted to ask you about, is part of the strategy just acquiring land in the right strategic places, or is it more, you know, focusing on a business plan to build something specific and then seeking the land?
So two parts there. So, I mean, my partnership with Y Street Capital, we identify and we have a couple different asset classes that we will actually go vertical and build, meaning like we'll entitle the land and we'll build the product. Okay. Those two asset classes are multifamily and storage units for it. Okay, those are our two that like our bread and butter that we'll actually construct and build. However, I mean, we just closed our largest deal yet yesterday.
Wow, congratulations.
So 20 million of that was just shy of 1,800 acres in Colorado Springs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
wow.
We'll build all of that? No, we will. But it's a master plan community that we'll be working with. And it'll be a generational project. I mean, it's not going to be all done in a year, right?
No.
That's going to be several years. But it's a prime location. We're really excited. It's 10 minutes away from the airport.
Wow.
And it's just located in between the airport and Schriever Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm.
And bursting at its seams, and they need defense contracts, land, and everything, you know, lots of different things. So we're really excited about that deal. It's taken us, you know, like, I don't know, 18 months to work on that deal.
That's amazing.
And the comp plan of that has about 9,000 different housing units of all different types, like 1 acre, 5 acres, apartments, you know, townhomes, every housing type. It's basically a small city that we're creating there.
Sure. It's a whole neighborhood. It really is. It's like going to be a subsection of Colorado Springs. I mean, Colorado Springs is not too huge of a city to begin with.
No. So anyway, sorry, I kind of fast forwarded back to there. But
no, that's amazing. Yeah. But yeah, so you said you were mentioning that those, you know, storage and multifamily are the ones that you will develop, you know, from vertically, from the ground up. And then there are other types of asset classes. I think you remember, you mentioning, or we worked actually on a project together with your team on an assisted living facility. What other types of projects do you work on?
That was, I've even owned my own assisted living. When I was saying one asset class that I didn't care for, that was one. Not because of the investment. I just found the problem. I went with a small assisted living, and the problem was, is I was like too hands-on, and I fell in love with way too many grandmas. And then I got a little frustrated when their families wouldn't come visit them. And so I was too attached. And I realized this is not the asset class for me for it. And just because it was a small one. So I'm not, that is not a hate on assisted living. Some people are super successful. Victor has an incredible assisted living in Lake Charles, Louisiana, that he is really proud of. And it is a fabulous model. So I'm not against assisted living. Me and my husband found that we didn't care for that one. So.
Didn't care for it. Okay. Yeah. So the focus, obviously, it sounds like this 1,800 acre subdivision project is going to be taking up quite a bit of your time and energy.
So we have that. We have several. I have 5 projects in Idaho right now that are like large, not 1,800 acres, but they're like 50 acres, you know, that we've developed a subdivision. And usually those ones we are selling the paper, meaning if people aren't as familiar with development, that means basically you've gone through the city process, you've figured out all the problems, you've preliminary platted it, and then you sell or work hand in hand with a builder. And so we like to focus on projects that are like build for rent communities and sell them to family offices that are looking for those. So
those are great business model. And I mean, I think one of the main things, what it sounds like is in all these development projects is what's behind all of this is that there's a huge lack of housing. I mean, there's a shortage like almost never before of affordable housing, but housing in general, all over the place. I mean, so you're talking about building Colorado Springs, which is a very growing area, Idaho, which is one of the most fastest growing population, percentage wise states in the country. What else is driving you behind that? I'm just assuming.
Yeah, no, it's just, you know, and we do a lot in Utah because that's where I'm home based as well. But yeah, it's just driving of the fact that number one, I think the bigger guys have really found, as far as like the really big money has found, like, okay, we should be in real estate even more. And so they, you know, those are the guys that are buying the builds for rent communities. It's an entire, like 50 acres full of single family home. They're not all apartments, you know, and they're renting and they have a lot of money behind them. But most importantly, there's a need that we're filling. So it's all about, I think in business, as long as you are providing a need that the society needs, then you have a good business model. And real estate is one of those, especially if we're focusing more on, I won't say affordable housing because that word has kind of a bad connotation to it now,
right?
But I'll say attainable housing. You know, I'm not Section 8 housing, but attainable housing that people can actually afford.
Right.
It's still in there, right? But they could actually get to is really important.
For sure. Especially within, building communities. You talk about investing in the communities where you live. I mean, I think that's really important. I'm sure you've seen a lot of changes over the past 15 years that you've been involved in the industry.
Yeah. And there's also a lot that goes into planning as far as making beautiful communities. You know, it's not all about how much density can we throw into an area. You know, what walkways and pathways and parks can we put in an area, helping these poor little cities that are just, they don't have all that knowledge either. They don't have urban planning knowledge, and so we're helping those cities say, hey, just so you know, it might be a good idea to put some commercial care or phased type of density of housing here. Not everybody can afford 1-acre lots. So, you might want to have a couple different varieties. Mm-hmm. So,
no, that's amazing. Yeah. I want to ask you, going back to, getting started in the real estate game, when you were talking about going to teaching in night school and moving into the, the properties that you were describing, it sounds like obviously that was a challenging period of time. It was not something that started out easy, which usually success does not start out easy. But at what point did you realize that, hey, this is something that I want to focus more time into, and this is actually a viable option in terms of helping to build our wealth and get out of this, this situation that you were in?
Yeah. And between me and my husband, we've always kind of had like, okay, Amy, your income is, besides our goal was, is your income is going to be for the future, help create this generational wealth for our family, help bring us out. Me and my husband both came from very, very poor circumstances. So we definitely weren't born with a silver spoon in our mouth or an abundance mindset growing up at all for it. So it was important for us to change our family tree of saying, okay, we're going to do things differently in our family. Not that my parents are incredible and, not that they didn't provide for me, but I knew I wanted more, right? And so we always worked on that. And so when we were starting these houses, number one, at first it was, okay, we don't want to live like this anymore. We want to be able to go on a date and, eat some sushi or something, right? Like we want to be able to do these, or I love to travel now, right? Like I want to be able to experience some of these things. However, we still live pretty frugally with things because we never actually took the profits and then just went and splurged. Okay, there was like this one time that we're like, screw real estate, I'm going to buy a nice car. Like it wasn't like a super nice car. We're talking like a $40,000. Like I have heated seats now,
That's important in Utah.
That's important to me. Okay. I get cold. So we never really splurged, and it was always just rolling it into the next house, because we were looking towards the future. And so it wasn't until I had my fourth child that we were doing these real estate deals that I actually got my real estate license. And then I was running it solely. And then I have a tendency to be a workaholic. I like to work and I like to work hard. And so my family was starting to suffer with that. And we kind of realigned. And at first we quit and said, okay, I'm not going to do real estate. And then we said, well, I still have a passion for helping people, teaching people and doing real estate. So my husband actually quit his corporate job then and helped me with just the real estate. And we built this residential company of real estate. And then once we got that off and running, I kind of said, great, thanks for helping me build this. You take it over and I'm just going to focus on larger deals for it. So that's kind of I know we hyper jumped from one to 15. That was like year 8 in between there.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Yeah. So we're around like 2015, 2016, just kind of get an idea of the feeling of the time frame there. And then, you know, what drove you or what pushed you to realize that, you know, you wanted to deal with much larger deals? I mean, what was it about the smaller or the single families or that, you know, development that you were doing before that you just, you wanted to move away from or move into something bigger?
I saw the power and it dawned on me that doing one small deal almost is as much work as doing one large deal, but the larger deals played 10x, you know? So I felt like if I'm going to spend this time working on it, I'm going to make it worth my time for it. And so that's when we went and jumped to these larger deals. I think the largest item that helped me get to that trajectory of how did I jump from, people ask me that a lot of times, how do you go from single to these bigger deals? And number one, if you would have asked me 8 years ago, are you going to close on a $20 million, 1,800 acre property? I would say, no way. You know, I would say, there's no way I would do that. But what it did do is if you surround yourself with the right team and you have all those other parts together, you then have the confidence. You don't even have your own confidence to do things because that does take a lot. But now you have the confidence of your team. So you can lean in on your team when you feel like, oh, I can't, you have that imposter syndrome of like, who am I to think that I can do this for it? You can lean in on team for that. And I would say that's an important role. The people that say, I don't want any kind of partnerships, I don't want to do it, I don't want to depend on anybody else, I just think that's a recipe for being stagnant. Maybe not failure, but stagnant. You're not going to grow.
Yeah. And you've seen that time and time again. That's excellent advice because you can, like you said, you can borrow from other people's experience and grow faster together as a team. And I think that that's really the key to true success in larger deals. Yes, you can, you know, build a smaller single family company. Maybe you can do that all on your own. But when you're getting into bigger deals, I mean, not only couldn't you have imagined buying a $20 million deal 10 years ago, it wouldn't have even been possible. Meaning, you need the net worth. You need the network to be able to bring something like that, a deal like that together. So it's like, you know, it reminds me of a book about, you know, how we got here won't get you there. Right. And so it's about just making those leaps, but you will never even know where you're going to go. You just have to keep striving up.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
Well, Amy, I want to transition now to what we call the final four. These are four questions I ask all my guests. And so the first question to you is, what is the worst job that you ever had?
So you're going to laugh at this, and I'm going to sound like a horrible person in saying that this was my worst job. But there was one time that I was a daycare provider in between because it was a job that I could bring. It was a job I could bring my son to and make some money on the side.
Right.
And I just realized I hated it. I have five kids. I love my children. I just realized I didn't really care for watching little kids of lots of little people. I didn't have that patience of that. And that sounds horrible. So I really only did it for like 3 months. And then I was like, nope, I can do something else.
Yeah. No, my wife did that for some time as well. And it takes so much energy.
Yeah. I just felt like they sucked me dry.
Totally.
Yeah. I just didn't feel like I had it. Yeah. So it didn't elevate me. And so that's why I laughed. I'm like, oh, don't hate me that I hate this.
No, that's good. That's great. No, that's a great one. So the second question is, what is a book you've read that's given you a paradigm shift?
This is hard because I I'm consuming a book every week, I feel like. So I'm always looking at new books. And I would say that there's two, but I'll go with one of The Wealthy Gardener. And not a lot of people read this one. It's not like the super hip popular one or anything like that. But the reason why is I think it really helped me in that time. I was starting to get where I was starting to become misaligned, where it was all about, I was only focused on the financing or the funds and what that would do for my family. But I wasn't, in that sense, I also had forgotten forgotten about a little bit about my family. I became misaligned there. And I was like, so worried over here that I had forgotten about, I'm not doing some of these smaller things for my family over here. Like, for example, I was scheduling over and not making, we weren't having family dinners anymore or things. We were too busy for it. And after reading that book, I realized, okay, yes, I'm planting these seeds for growth, for generational wealth, and these my kids are going to have there, but I'm not going to sacrifice my children's childhood to get there. Like, right. So I'm going to make sure that I'm time blocking and working on both of these things together.
Yeah, no, and that's huge. And that's sometimes it takes that outside source to kind of push you back into that. You know,
but some people might read that book and maybe they didn't actually get that message. But there's a lot of, you know, somebody could read a book and they're like, really, I did not get that from that book. It was just very reflective on there. And so, yeah, I just.
No, and a good book, which is going to be talking about personal development, is going to bring out in each one of us those things that we know we need to work on and what's important to us individually. So, and you're absolutely right. Everyone, you know, takes different lessons out of different books all the time, which is why I ask this question, because I get so many different answers every time, which is awesome. And this is a new book, so we'll make sure to put that in the show notes if anyone wants to check that out. So third question is, what is a skill or talent that you would like to learn? And this could be anything.
I'm always open to learning new skills. And I would say I've always wanted to learn more about fishing. Is that weird? Deep sea fishing?
It's not weird at all. I mean, deep sea fishing might be a little weird in Utah.
Yeah. It's totally landlocked. So that's a hard thing. Between deep sea fishing and sailing, I would always love to learn more about sailing. I love water. So yeah, those are two skills I'd love to learn more.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, obviously being landlocked in Utah doesn't lend to that, but yeah, you know, I'm sure you do it.
And I love to travel. And so that's one of my bucket list things that what I work hard for is so that we can be about experiences. I'm not so much into things, but I do love experiences. So.
All right. Awesome. And fourth and final question, what does success mean to you?
Success means that I can, number one, that I've been able to share along the way. And lift others up in making their burdens light, and maybe just saying, you know, being accomplished and saying, great job, you made a difference in society for it. And so that's why, you know, one cause that I'm really is a strong cause of mine is to empower women to take control of their finances and actually know and be able to, you know, not wait. In my line of work in development, there are not a lot of women developers. You know, I'm definitely a minority there. So I come across that all the time. There are a lot more women investors that are doing large and big things, and that's incredible. But I still feel like there's not enough for it. Yeah. And I think because women think that we have to be, before we can actually execute, we have to be 95% there. And men will jump in at 25% and be like, I'll figure it out. I'll get that confidence down the way. And I'm trying to help women jump in just like that.
That's awesome. Well, good for you. That's amazing. And we actually, I don't know if you know her, but we had Jennifer Grimson on the podcast. I think it was even within the first 100 episodes. So a couple of years ago already. And she has a podcast and a kind of a group called Micro Empires, which is really focused on that very concept of, you know, helping empowering women about, you know, learning about finances and taking control of finances. So really amazing story. And I recommend everyone to go back and check out that episode again with Jennifer Grimson, not to be confused with her husband, Stu Grimson, the Grim Reaper, but that also great episode. But Amy, this has been awesome. I appreciate you taking the time with us today. How can our listeners find you or reach out to you?
Yeah, ystreetcapital.com is our website. AmyJ@ystreetcapital.com. You can email me. A lot of times I'm passionate. One way I like to give back is I give individuals game plans of, you know, and because we've been from the very beginning to here, I can kind of give you a pathway and a game plan of, hey, this is what you, these are your next steps so that you can do an investing. And so if you're interested in that, you can email me at amyj@ystreetcapital.com.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure to put all that in the show notes, and it's really been a pleasure. I appreciate you taking the time out, and have a great rest of your day.
Hey, awesome. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
And to all our listeners, thank you guys again for joining and listening all the way until the end. And remember, the best advice comes only when you ask.
Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn. Send me a DM, a connection request, Yona Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.